Welcome to the Roth Show.
That's my motorcycle sound. Tom, can you do a motorcycle sound?
I don't think I have that in me, no.
That sounds more like a tractor, right? Doesn't it? It sounds like... Faux pas! Right here on the Roth Show. This Volkswagen...
The Roth Show.
Live in front of your naked, steaming eyes, big shout out to TJ. TJ, tell us her information here, Tom. TJ, you're going to look at her picture right here. She's the woman of my life. She's the woman of my dreams. She's my mystery dream date. I've never met her. I didn't know if I was ever going to meet her. And she fell off a motorcycle right after this picture. How do we find her?
Her Instagram is renegades_. That's at renegades_. There's a GoFundMe link in her bio.
Okay, that's what Tom said. Do what Tom said. And, hey, big shout-out to you, sugar. We're thinking of you in the hospital here. And you know what? I think we should talk about motorcycles. Do you have any motorcycle kind of background there?
Just motorbikes when I was a kid. That was kind of it. Never a real motorcycle.
Okay, when you talk about motorbikes, is there a specific definition to that? Because I know exactly what you mean, but I don't know if the rest of the world ever experienced motorbikes, okay? This is the day and age when you have 9 different kinds of skateboard. When I built a skateboard, we had me and George Somas, who lived next door, we had to take roller skates, literally, take them off the bottom of the boots, saw the thing in half, okay, and on the bottom of a 2x4, which you had to fix, like so forth, or a 4x4 or whatever, then nail the wheels to the bottom, and they were like clay wheels or something, you know, and they made a great racket. And then when whoever it was invented Kryptonics or, you know, some sort of rubberized wheels, we went off-road. But a mini bike happened at the exact same time. If somehow you had a dad who knew his way around engines, if you had a dad who was a gardener, if you had a dad who was a contractor, or a dad who worked in automotives or something like that, then those kids, okay, like the Emerson brothers, they had a mini bike. Did you actually own a mini bike?
I had a something that was created in a garage. I don't even think it was, there was no brand name to it. It was a Frankenstein piece of machinery. I don't even know if it had brakes on it.
Who built it for you? Did your dad build it?
My dad did not build it. My cousin and his brother built it out on the farm I used to go to in the summertime.
Okay. And you used it on dirt roads, right?
Did it have
lawnmower wheels on it?
It had funky lawnmower wheels.
Because these days when I think of lawnmower wheels, I think of the very tiny front wheels on one of those tractor pullers. If you've never seen a tractor pull, check it out at the Polar Magazine, okay? They'll take 4 Hemi head, like Hemi Cuda kind of engines. I know them to be Hemi Cuda, you know, Big Daddy Roth with the pipes and everything. They'll put 4 of those on one frame. And in the back, you've got ag. It's called ag now, not agriculture. Okay. Be woke, Tom. Be a woke farmer, will you? And the tires are as big as I am, okay? Even bigger now that after my last surgery. They're literally as wide as my Mr. Giebler, my last phys ed teacher, okay, on either side. And in front, they're using lawnmower wheels. No shit. They're about this. And it looks, once again, like Big Daddy Roth, who is not related to me specifically, but is directly related to me spiritually. Were you a Big Daddy Roth fan growing up? Do you know the Beatnik Bandit?
Oh, yeah.
Road Agent?
I loved all that stuff when I was a kid.
Did you draw monsters when you were growing up?
I did.
Monsters with an 8-ball Hurst shifter, okay? That's called a Hurst 5-way 8-ball shifter, okay? And you lusted for one of those. And you would have the pipes, right? You got to have the pipes. And you would practice making the sound. Okay, anytime I meet somebody like in law enforcement, I go, can you make a gun sound? And virtually everyone can. Make a gun sound. Do a gun sound. You haven't shot in a while.
No.
Okay, see now, I watch a lot of Netflix. And particularly, that's an Eastwood one. Actually, that's kind of Italian Western, right? Like this. Can you do an automatic weapon? Try it. No, that sounds like a car now. That sounds like a Yamaha on a cold morning and out on salt water. I'll be right fucking there. All right. Everybody's got a car sound, all right? And the V-dub, 1966 V-dub, sounds like this. Because it's always going somewhere. That car was always going somewhere, right? And if you practiced the Harley Davidson, that was the sound of freedom. Your first taste of freedom was on a bicycle. I still ride a bicycle, okay? But the sound of really going somewhere like Easy Rider, you ever seen the movie? Peter Fonda, yeah. Dennis Hopper. Yeah. Okay, that's almost a national anthem film. You know, you kind of close your eyes and it's a natural, it's a, we're leading a digital prison break here. That was a geographic spiritual prison break back in when that came out, 1968, somewhere in there. My parents wouldn't let me go see it. So I snuck out in the rain. I was living up north here in Altadena. All right. And I remember it was raining and I snuck out of the house and I walked almost 2 miles to the Uptown Theater and paid, I think it was $2.50 to see Easy Rider and Gimme Shelter. Ooh, fuck. Careful what you let your kids see. Do you feel all right?
The Roth Show.
Today we watch reality series because it's kind of a guilty pleasure. You're kind of triangulating where we are personally on the social, cultural something map. And for example, when a Kardashian walks out on the TV set, doesn't matter if you love her, you hate her, if you enjoy what's going on, you're calculating where you are diagrammatically. For example, you go, that's a great haircut. I'd love a girl with a haircut like that. And you might look at another girl and go, I wouldn't sleep with her. No, no, no. But I would listen to that guy's music. Or you're looking and go, no, I would never listen to that guy's music, but I definitely fuck her. And you're going back and forth. And here's where I would I wear those shoes? And yeah, put that on the map. And but I wouldn't wear a jacket like that. And I certainly wouldn't have a sex change. And you're gonna move that and boom, boom, boom. But I do approve if he really wants it. And you're kind of shaping yourself, okay? When people on reality series fuck up, which is almost intentionally planned, okay, we need some conflict or there's no Shakespeare going on. We need a whole lot of Shakespeare going on. That only comes from conflict, dissonance. It's not when people get along, okay? It's when everybody starts arguing. And the only time people listen to both sides of an argument, Tom, pay attention to this, the only one who listens to both sides of an argument is the neighbors. Tell your girlfriend, I'm telling you. And we're the neighbors when we watch a reality series, okay? It's a guilty pleasure. And the guys will create along the way a false reality. Okay, they'll have a meeting before the show and they'll go, okay, in this one, Joey is going to accidentally fall into the water. How can we get that to happen? Oh, well, how about we complain and get into a pushing match and because the something didn't get cleaned up. You know, this is typical reality fare and we build towards the conflict. When we watch it, Jesus, I'm thinking back in the Civil War days, we used the Bible for this. You would watch, you would read about it, and you would hear it as a child in a story about the individual who got turned into a pillar of salt. And you went, thank God that ain't me. And you say that six times before the first commercial in your average reality show, right? It's the same. You're calculating, calibrating what's right, what's wrong. Oh, shit, he did it wrong. And now he's a box of Mortons without the iodine, all right? And Jesus, if you hang out in Hollywood too long, you burst into flames like Babylon. I'm still waiting. Hasn't happened, but it could, all right? First reality series that I ever saw was on a Monday night at the Uptown Theater. It was Easy Rider. They made it up as they were going along exactly the way a reality series does today. They created conflictual scenarios. Okay, here we are at the campfire arguing. Here we are at this old Moyer and, you know, so forth. But it was made up as they go. And I don't think people think of it as a reality series. They glued the scenes together, but if you think of it, it is about 9 weeks of a reality drama strung out. Two fellas get on bikes, head out across the country and have experiences. There's probably six different variations of that right now that are available on different platforms. Okay, two guys go out, a guy and a Weimaraner go out, two girls go out, now it's three girls go out, you know, and then you get the seven girls get snowed in. I have that one. Part two's the best, Tom. The first one, though, was Easy Rider, and when we looked at it, it was not a guilty pleasure. We wanted to be it. It was very different. It was the complete converse of the way we look at reality series today. Today, you look at it so you can go, whoa, thank God, okay? I'm going to tell you a feeling. Have you ever made a meal for a kid, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and you know the feeling you get? You get a feeling, okay. That's the feeling I get when I'm on stage. Have you ever made a meal for 10 people, say out camping?
Absolutely.
Okay. And you know when they're really having a good time with it and you stand back and you're wiping your hands off, that feeling is the feeling that I get when I'm at Madison Square Garden. And the only time that I really got that feeling was when I saw a little cancer kid at the hospital, and he was in there for his fourth surgery, and his parents and everybody were freaking out, and he looked at me, and he went like this, because I didn't have any bandages, and I went, huh? And he went, how many? I said, how many? Like this, he went, four. And I went like, and he went, well, shit! Now, he didn't say it. He was 9 years old, but you could, and he looked up at his parents like, we're fucking cool, okay? And that's what you get from a reality series, all right? You look at that on a really good night, the near misses, and, you know, it's like going to an interesting high school reunion in a very woke time. I say, hey, man, what are you doing these days? Oh, I became a physician. Hey, what about you, man? Oh, I'm a legal attorney, $800 an hour, man. How about you? I'm a girl. Need legal? It's, and you don't blink because that's a common thing, all right? Today, you look at things very differently in reality, but when you watched Easy Rider, you wanted to be that. You wanted to get on that bike. You wanted to go. And even the conflicts were incendiary. The idea of Captain America and the fellow, I forget the other character's name, okay? But you actually wanted to be the other character because he was more like Keith Richards. A little wabi-sabi. A little easier to deal with in terms of how do I look in the morning? And by the way, how do I look in the morning? I actually sound like that, whether the camera's on or not.
Roth, The Roth Show, brought to you by Inc., the original. And we prefer you say it that way. Inc., the original. That one was even a little better. Nice. Love your tattoos.
1968, there was the Free Press and Kazoo. I'm not sure why they called it kazoo, probably because they sold them, and that was kind of a fun instrument that anybody could play. First step towards world peace. And the next couple of steps towards world peace were the posters that I had on my wall. Growing up, I had Leonard Bernstein, Bobby Fischer, and Bob Dylan. But then that later grew. It included Jimi Hendrix, Groucho Marx, and Marlon Brando and The Wild One. I had no idea what The Wild One was. It was a bike movie that came literally before my time. My time was Choppers, okay? I can't really describe to you technically what it is, but I know when I see one. And that was not the Marlon Brando police bike. You know, the police hog, they called it, or something like this. Those fellas were based, as I understand it, on post-war or post-Korean War fellas who want to, you know, they're used to being in teams and groups and crews, and particularly fellas in the Navy, mechanics and third mechanized division kinds of fellas, you know, are real good and handy with tools and stuff. Midshipmen always had those caps, but the big white ones that you see, for example, they were much smaller during battle time, a little small, like this. And they wore those hats, you know, same way as you might wear some sort of cap that you bring from service before, or you wear a jacket, you know, like the bomber jacket that you had when you were in the Air Force, and the mechanics came from that. You put your bomber jacket on and that little aviation cap, and that's what you're going to ride your Harley Davidson, Fat Bob, whatever, bunch of guys together. Okay, I'm going to call it Turbo Pop Entertainment. I grew up with that. Starts with mini bikes, goes all the way up to full pop. And you have to say it like that because otherwise nobody's going to hear you. You have four hemispherical CUDA engines, whatever. Drag racing, you only have two. Come on, man. You got to get with it. Okay. So it includes speedboats. It includes jet skis. It includes snowmobiles, etc. And once you combine whatever that chemical, that guy chemical, I'm full of it, either that guy chemical with alcoholic beverages and anything that sounds even remotely like... You know what's going to happen, especially if there's girls involved and music. The idea of Marlon Brando with that hat and the motorbike, I never really saw the movie. I knew the quote when the girl behind the counter says, "What are you going against?" And he goes, "What do you got?" That appealed to an entire generation. Okay, whatever it is, we want to do against it somehow. And now I realize that all generations do that. Every generation thinks we hold the mortgage on what's happening now, and it's going to be that way forever, so let's rebel. And it can be something for positive, okay? And it can be something that's just for the sake of upsetting people. Ancient Roman kids, fact, stopped brushing their hair, and they put twigs in it so that they would look like barbarians and freak their parents out or anything. You're thinking, but that's just like Led Zeppelin, Dave. Yes, it was. I think dreadlocks do the same thing, and I'm not dismissing 12 tribes of Israel, Ital, Aidi, or any religious or spiritual connotation, but in the right lighting, remember my haircut, in the right lighting, I was pretty fucking scary too, I know. There's a point in any guy's life when you stop being scary. I may have passed that point. Hold on, let me see Tom's face. Come back, Tom. Tom, come back to work. Still works.
The Roth Show.
The bikes of my day and age are choppers. Okay. They're mixing and matching, and it's Hell's Angels and Gypsy Jokers and Satan's Slaves. These are great names. I don't know what the gangs actually looked like, and I'm not even sure exactly what models of Harley-Davidsons those are, but it's building a commune because there was always gals and then ultimately kids and families, you know, that would take off. The president has five kids of the Mongols. I saw the documentary. This is recently out in San Bernardino, okay? Things update, but some things kind of remain the same. The original, those big fat Harley Davidsons, we didn't really have a taste for them simply because it was another generation. The police rode them, but also, you know, you had Marlon Brando. I don't know what the name of his gang was, but it belonged to a different generation. I keep a holdover of that. You know, you've talked about, I've talked about my seven surgeries, but I've never brought up what the nurses call the eighth wonder. Yep. I've saved it for this dissertation specifically because, you know, my dick, Little Elvis, that's his name, works perfectly. But I'm getting a little bit older, and I know that there's a point in my life when Little Elvis might not be able to be combat ready right on time. And I thought, you know what? In tribute to my, you know, interaction with motorcycles, I had Dr. Duffy put in one of those dick implants, but not the hydraulic ones. I got a kickstand from an old Harley Davidson flat bob heritage series, whatever it is. It's about 18 inches long and it's dry weight tested up to 1800 pounds. I've taken a test and I got a taste for women a little bit older as I am getting. We become a little weight chunkier and you never know. So dry weight tested up to 1800 pounds. She's anodized chrome blue. Little in joke there. And combat ready whenever, baby. Hoorah. Music started with rock and roll for me. Not so much with Stones, Who, Zeppelin, and that kind of thing, but top 40, 1960s early kind of rock and roll. And the best were the bike songs. You had Davy Allen and the Arrows doing the Wild Angels theme. I think, and you make your mouth like this, and you make the fuck face like you're about to, the beginning of the F. And you can look your teacher right in the eye and go, like you're just about to say something that starts with. Followed up by Nancy Sinatra, which clearly is the kind of dame you got if you were the boss of a bike gang. Wild and free, living wild as the wind. The wild angels wide tonight. And if you think about it, I did look a little bit like Peter Fonda with those glasses. And he launched the aviators. Aviator glasses, right? Came right out of the military. You have a choice of two styles. Aviator shape, that egg, bent egg shape, or the square ones, particularly if you're in aviation or mechanized, you dig? And those come in prescription, and they come in sunglass prescription now. I don't know if they did then. So you wore your aviators, your bomber jacket, okay? You wore your dungarees, which really were Navy issue. That's big baggity ones, okay? And big Navy boots. Those are the cork soles or the ones that had the strap on the bottom, right? So that people know that you were with mechanized. You were in a tank. You were in a gun turret or shit. That's why you needed that strap on your boot, man. Same reason Springsteen needs that strap on a boot, man. Because he's lifting himself up and a whole fucking generation with him.
The Roth Show.
Two things happened in 1965 for American public and the general middle class working man and his progeny, his family. First, Andy Warhol showed us that you didn't have to be on a museum wall to really enjoy art. You didn't even have to go to the museum to enjoy art. Pop art wound up on a coffee cup. It wound up on your lapels. It wound up on decals on the glass window so you wouldn't walk through the glass window. The dog collar had, pastel on it and so forth. Second, Honda told us you meet the nicest people on a Honda. The 150 was a little clunky. They figured it out in 1965, right around there. It was the 250 Scrambler. And the ads were everybody. It looked like Dennis the Menace's dad. I think there was a Santa Claus, folks that looked like homeroom teacher Mrs. Newman, and on the Honda 250 or the 250 Scrambler, I can get one of those. And in your head, you didn't have to admit it to anybody. This is important. In your head, you were Marlon Brando. But it was just a 250 Scrambler, which you could ride to senior year high school, or you could ride it to college, or you could ride it supposedly to work. And you started to see these people in business suits. Today, when you go to Wall Street or in Midtown in Manhattan, a lot of gals in business suits, business apparel, but they're wearing tennis shoes, and they're carrying a shoulder bag or a backpack. And in that backpack is her real shoes, the ones with the heels and the buckles, okay? But she's going to walk to work, and she's going to use that distance as part of her gear for, exercise or so forth. She's going to walk a mile, something like that. Then change her shoes, go to work. The first time we saw an element of that, or at least first time I was aware of it, is, wow, you could be somebody with a necktie and a suit, but you could ride a motorcycle to work, and that was completely new. That was completely, wow. I applied that to Ink the Original. Tattooing today is completely universal. There's not a neighborhood that doesn't have it. When we were talking about tattooing, Jesus, even 15 summers ago, which isn't that much, you had to go to a place to find them where they were tattooed. You would go to Silver Lake, North Hollywood. You'd go down below 14th Street into the Alphabet City or Tompkins Square area to find people who had tattooing. I call it tattooing now. Not tattoos, it's tattooing. Just like singing, just like dancing, just like painting, okay? Engraving suggests that it's going to follow a form. Tattoos has a different place. That's a decal. That's something that is a logo, and there's a lot of place for that. If you have a meaning, if it's a team, if it's a crew, even if it's a style of motorcycle that means something very specific to you. And yeah, I got to imagine there's more than one or two Harley Davidson logo tattoos out there. We're going to expand it to tattooing. You meet the nicest people on a Honda? Well, you meet every kind of people with tattooing. No longer is it, what kind of people? We want to do a photo journal thing on tattoos. Where should we go? I know, an island, that kind of stuff. Now, everybody on the boat that gets you to the island, everybody in customs, you can't see it because they're wearing uniforms, but everybody who works at the airport, including the wait staff, especially if they have difficult to pronounce last names, everybody's got tattoos. I was sitting in Japan, and there was a transit coming from South Pacific somewhere, the Tuamotus, and there was a little kid there He had a whole island thing. It looked like a tattoo. He looked like he was 7 years old. I asked the lady, I said, excuse me, is that a tribal thing? She said, no, that's temporary. But it's temporary until he gets the right driver's license, and boom, it becomes for real. So universal. It's no longer just limited to specific tribes and specific groups. It's everywhere. And you meet the nicest people with ink.
Roth, The Roth Show. You're listening to David Lee Roth, The Roth Show.
When I was in my 20s, I had to go through the obligatory, and it is obligatory, singer in a hard rock band, biker slash I am immortal phase. Are you familiar with that, Tom? You've worked with a lot of rock bands, a lot of singers coming out of the Henson studio and a variety of other places. Have you experienced singers who are going through this phase?
I have, actually, yes. Guys that are getting motorcycles, that are riding motorcycles that never did before.
And they never did before, but what kind of motorbikes are they usually choosing?
I haven't come across a lot of guys getting Harleys these days. They're usually smaller bikes, Hondas, but, you know, nice bikes.
And what is the, nice bikes is subjective. What is the lifestyle? What is the determination? What's the theater of it? For example, me, I was Road Warrior Tarzan with a bar mitzvah, Lee Roth. That's kind of generally how I was known in the ladies' room at the Troubadour. When I was in my 20s, okay, remember how I looked? My haircut had its own area code. It was like James Brown. My haircut would have had its own Instagram if I had haircut today. No, really, and that was as important part of riding the bike as the actual bike at that point in time. I'm not talking about real biking. I'm not talking about real, genuine motorcycling. I'm not talking about somebody who knows how to build it or fix it. I'm talking about my approach. It leads singers who have virtually no fucking business on anything without training wheels or a handler sitting in a sidecar going, whoa, whoa, whoa. You follow me so far?
I do.
You're in agreement?
I am.
Then let's continue. I go down. You want to continue? I go down to Ventura Boulevard. Roscoe Boulevard. Whoa. Yeah, they're connected. Roscoe Boulevard. And there's an amazing Harley Davidson shop there. Probably still is. Long, long window runs along, you know, and I'm in my 20s, whatever. And I show up, Road Warrior. I got those pants, the jacket, the scarf, everything. Okay, get the same kind of glasses. That's why I wore them. And I walk in, and the fella's legit. You know, he's wiping his hands off and everything. Oh, David Lee, how are you? Great, man. Put the tools away, man. How can I have great stuff like this? So, well, how can I help you? Oh, I want to buy a bike. It's time to buy a motorcycle. Oh, I can see that. He says, so what are you thinking? Harley Davidson, flat bob, heritage series, soft tail, pan head, sort of long fork kind of a... He's very serious about it. And I thought for a second and I said, without a trace of humor, I said, I'm thinking about something my size in blue. And there was that silence. And he said, okay. And then, you know, when you take ones... You didn't need, that was just consonant. Okay. And, you know, it's when the lights come on of what he's dealing with or whatever, what my values and priorities are. And we went around and tried them on because I didn't know anything about engines. I didn't know anything about it. For me, it was the obligatory rock and roll guy singing in a hard rock band / Hell's Angel rebel cell. Indeed, when I was living on Horn Street right up above Tower Records, which is off of Sunset, the famous Tower Records, I would literally listen to Billy Idol songs as I got ready. I can do Billy. You want me to do Billy? You want me to do it with the accent? Little rebel, yeah. Right? Yeah, I would do that shit. You know, have the floor 14 would be a that white wedding. And those two notes launched an entire career. And for me, it would launch quite a fucking weekend usually. White wedding. And I go downstairs and I get on my bike. And I had a Harley Davidson, which I had tried on in the window at the Harley Davidson store on Roscoe Boulevard. I don't know what the guy was. This wasn't Orange County Choppers. This is back when I'm in my 20s. You know, he's like this. And I try one on and I come in and I look in the mirror and I go, got anything lower? Serious. Come on. Think of who I was. Have fun with that now. And we brought out something in blue. You can see it on video. Get on the YouTube. And got one there. It's like, sits low. I go, okay. I'll take it. And I paid for him right there. Drove it right off of the yacht, right off of the lot. It was my land yacht, okay? Great big thing. You got your feet all the way forward on the pegs. You know that routine. It's like you're almost reclined. I'll be lounging on the Riviera. The Riviera Lounge, that is. You know, that's a famous sound that... That's a famous sound. It's as famous as the Zippo lighter. Tink, when you do that, the sound of a shotgun racking. Everybody knows what that is. A screen door in a trailer with a girl named Peppa smoking a non-filter cigarette going, where the hell is Dave? All right, I know that sound. And it's as familiar as... which is the sound Peppa makes me... Stay focused, will you? Because it's all Harley Davidson humor here, man. You would get that. You're wearing a bike jacket right now. You're wearing a motorcycle jacket right now, okay? It's in everything we do. It's like James Brown is in every kind of music possible now, and Harley Davidson is in everything we do, okay? Cut to Sunset Boulevard. The sun is setting. It's exactly the right time, okay? You've seen the video of me. I've got the steer horns like from a bull, you know? The bull sounds a lot like the bike. And I was fortified by Schlitz malt liquor. The bull. The rebel cell. Oh, yeah. I'm headed for a white wedding. Yeah. And then that's the feel, man. It's Billy Idol is the perfect music for that. And I would listen to that up on floor 14, you know, up above on Horn Street. A lot of musicians know exactly the apartment building I'm talking about. I'd come steaming down that hill, and you go as slow as you can. Otherwise, they can't tell who's driving. This was before helmets, okay? So it was as important what you're wearing and so forth, you know? And you see it in the video, I think in Panama or something, the Van Halen tune. That's daylight of me. And you go as slow as you can because the traffic, tourist traffic, starts to queue up. And going through, I think it's Crescent Heights and Sunset Boulevard where Greenblatt's Deli is. There's a huge glut. There was a club right there and there's the Marmont Hotel and it's a nice, slow going thing. And I remember I got two great stories about front pegs. These are front peg stories. There's regular pegs, which you use when you're just kind of like on a bicycle kind of thing. You can walk the bike, okay? That's important. I'm going to show you why they're important later. You don't ever use them when you ride. You use the front pegs so that, you know, you got your legs all the way back like this and you just cruise and be making the scene with a gangster lean. It is related. And you're always back like this, and you're cruised like so, and you got both your feet up, and you are in such a position of ease that you're even working on your tan. This is the impression. You wear sunglasses with side pieces like this, not because of the deadly UVA rays, but because you're so cool, you don't even have to see as much as normal mortal people. Normal mortal people need to have a view of, say, 18 feet ahead. Glasses like this, you can't even see the mic. And everybody instinctually knows this, particularly when you're indoors after sundown. And you're sitting like this on the bike. This actually happened. Got to the corner right in front of Greenblatt's on Sunset Boulevard, and I was perfect. And I was just going so slow. You go so achingly slow that people are afraid you're going to fall over, right? And I'm looking in the mirror. I'm looking in the monitor. I'm going to get the cheekbones. I can't talk and keep cheekbones. And there's a carload of, I swear to God, three hot Korean chicks and a dude driving. You could tell they're fucking tourists. They're probably going to the rainbow. I might even land one of them. I'm in that right age and bracket when that shit could happen. It happened regularly. and the fucking bike fell over. And I watched him drive off laughing. You can laugh now. I'm not kidding, that shit happened.
So you're wondering, what are you gonna do? I can help you with those summertime blues and pinks and reds. Ink the original. Inktheoriginal.com.
Cut to my girlfriend at the time, Dottie. Dottie the Body. And it was my sister Lisa who named her Dottie the Body. Dottie the Body's body was so hottie that another girl called her Dottie the Body. That's how hottie her body was, okay? And Dot was out of this world for 25 other reasons, but I want you to know exactly the visual of this. I have the blue chopper with the steer horns in front. Remember, Tarzan, I'm leather, just everything. Dottie has leather, everything, except Dottie has fringe that doesn't stop when Dottie does. So Dottie will stop and everything else does this, and so does everybody else in the room. Dottie could walk into the Troubadour bar, which was more important at that time than the showroom inside, and there would be, say, even if there were 1,000 guys, when Dottie would walk in, the aggregate total IQ of all the people in that room would be less than the number of people in it. Do that math. Excuse me, my knuckles are dragging. You must be Dottie. That guy, your IQ would drop about 14 points, which was half the fun. She knew it, I knew it, and Dottie made sure the whole town stayed knowing it. We would listen to, what was it? It was Rebel Yell probably 19 times in a row up on the 14th floor, up on Horn, okay? And it was, let a rebel yell, and get into character. We get on the bike, okay, and slowly drift down past Spago around Tower Records. Everybody knows exactly where we go, and you go as slow as you can so that it seems like you're just about to slow down. You're always gunning it, and you make a lot a lot of noise in your promenade. It was a colorful time. It was a mighty time. And you would always finish with your trip to the Troubadour. Sidebar. Friend of mine's visa ran out. He's a British fella, United Kingdom, Alex. And he was getting ready to ship out. And he was a little bit forlorn. You know, he didn't want to leave. He'd been on the road with Van Halen for a number of times. And it was time to leave. And we'd seen the world together. And I said to him, Al, if you could take anything from the United States to the United Kingdom, now that your visa has run out and we don't know when you're going to be back. So what would you take from the United States? And without skipping a beat, he said, all right, Dave, I tell you what, I'd take the ladies' room from the Troubadour. Al wasn't kidding. The running story for me was I got laid twice, but only visited that ladies' room once. It was with two girls. And in those days, it was a mighty time. Using protection meant having security watch the door. He thinks I'm kidding. Two hits in one. We'll be right out! It's related. It's a motorcycle story. It's how I got there. Out front of the bar, it's one of those scenes from every rock and roll movie that you've ever seen. I'm sure that the Motley Crue movie has it, and every the Wahlberg movie of Rockstar has it. Everybody has big hair, everybody is dressed, everybody has shoulder pads, and that was the case at that time, okay? Everybody's lined up out front on the streets, and everybody is posing, and you're either an archetype, like the bomber jacket, the 517s, the cowboy boots, and the sideburns, languid, disinterested, or you're rock and roll, and it's, you know, you got a gun belt and you got the low cut and the drawstrings and so forth. I think I started many sub-generations of mini Daves. There's a lot of mini Daves making a living at it at this point in time, and proudly so. And here's one of the inside stories that I rarely tell. I tell it from the inside. I want to set the scene. I got Dottie the Body, who were now starting a caravan, because you got to go so slow that the cars start to queue up around you. But if you're looking good, they don't care. Sort of like when I drive my 51 Mercury and I take 4 minutes to get around a corner, nobody complains. And with Dottie the body in the car, you could take 12 minutes to get around the corner, and everybody's going slower, and they're fishing for their smartphone cameras, okay? We're coming on the bike, and low and slow. And everybody starts to back up. This is Royal Court, power, position, presence. I have these kinds of glasses on. No shit. Only thing missing is the string. Everything's shaking, including Dottie. Dottie's body's shaking. And the thing is, you know how this happens. I'm going to get you in the mood, man. I'm going to pull up in front, and there's the curb behind you. And you know this is a process. And the king, okay, like in sumo, when you're first fighting, you're just starting out as a sumo wrestler, you get into the ring, and you fight. Go! And you're done. But the real guys, the heavyweights, the 400-pounders, oh, they can take up to 7 minutes to park that shit, get ready to slug it out in one swipe. Boom! Collision. And it's just like that, right out in front of the Troubadour Bark and Grill. Here I come. I'm the king of Sunset Boulevard. I am the Lawrence of La Brea, the California Casanova, and everybody knows it. Dottie knows it. And we're making sure everybody stays knowing it, and they love it. So you get to park the bike 7 times, okay? You know that thing where you bring the bike up and you pull it up and then you bring it back? That's once. That's for beginners. That's opening act shit. Man, this is Van Halen. This is Running with the Devil. This is Might as Well Jump. This is Ain't Talking About Love. So I get to do it 7 times. Dottie steps off and the crowd goes silent. You could hear the air. You could hear the air over the bike. That's some shit. Think about that. And I get to pull that shit right up from, and you're gunning, and then you start to bring it back to the curb, and you look down, and you realize your shit is off by a millimeter. Fuck that. I'm never off. And you pull it forward about 4 feet. And I'm like, oh, shit, he's going to park it this time. What happens after he parks it, man? They're going to go inside of it. Like everybody's all watching and shit, and you can see him smoke, hot boxing the cigarettes, sunglasses steaming up, and then pull the bike up forward, and then pull it back and look back. Yeah, baby. Not quite fucking yet. And you pull it forward. You've seen the process, right? And Dottie is standing there, and she's doing that Jane Mansfield shit where she's like, is getting ready for everything to follow. And that's what it's all about inside, man. Like this, and you pull your shit right up. And then I pull it right back. We're on the 7th one. And see how my head looks? This accents my cheekbones. I can't talk, but I wouldn't be at the time. Like this, and I get it all right, and the crowd ran, I'm ready to get off, and I realize that I forgot to put the kickstand down, and the fucking bike falls, and I gotta get Dottie to help me pick the thing up.
The Roth Show.
Okay, this was all for you, TJ, to keep you entertained while she's in the hospital with her leg sprained. You can find her at, tell us, Tom.
At Renegades_.
Renegades_. TJ, get well soon. We're thinking of you. And you can find, there's a, what do you call this?
It's a GoFundMe page in her bio on her Instagram.
A GoFundMe page.
Fund me.
Okay, well, see this early. I mistranslated everything I thought you were telling me, Tom. And we were about, now I realize this is on her. This is how, this one step towards world peace was just achieved. And the next is when TJ gets well. TJ, we're thinking of you all the time. Stay in touch. Go fund yourself right here on The Roth Show.
The Roth Show, brought to you by Ink, the original.